Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Anfield Wrap. It's not a normal Anfield Wrap. It's a special Anfield Wrap. It's being hosted by me, Rob Gutman, for a start, and not Neil Atkinson. Neil's watching me. He's judging. He's going to weigh up how we get on in this one. It's a special Anfield Wrap because what we're doing is we're going to give you an insight into a show we do only behind under our subscription service, Tour Player. Those who subscribe to Tour Player will listen to what we call the Transfer Gutter Show, or the Gutter Show for short. It's an amazing show. Wins all kinds of awards. But you be the judge of how good it is, because you're now going to sample it. More than sample it, you're going to get best part of an hour's worth of guttering. And joining me to do that are going to be Adam Melia, Ian Ryan, and Neil Atkinson, who's first going to give us a word from our sponsors, Access Sports.
Access Sport indeed, accesssport.ac.uk/TAW. If anything that we've been talking about around their partnership with the Anfield Wrap has grabbed your attention, and we've discussed many of the aspects that they do, but one of the things that they do is they do boxing. There is an open day for the Academy coming on the 12th of April from 12 p.m. till 2 p.m. at the Rotunda ABC in conjunction with the Smiths Boxing Academy, who've been working with Access Sport to develop and create pathways for young people who've got an interest in boxing. The opportunity there is to study towards an L3 in sports coaching and sports science. It's the equivalent of 3A levels, which would help students progress onto most university courses if boxing is something that would appeal to a young student, both men and women, between the ages of 16 and 19. It involves daily professional technical training from boxing head coach Stephen Smith at the Rotunda to work alongside and complement training offered by your current boxing club. So it's complementary training, and it's not instead of in any way, shape or form. It offers support from the other Smith brothers and former student boxers who are now pros. There's an international training camp planned throughout the two-year programme, and sponsorship is available for any amateur clubs whose boxers enrol. So sponsorship available for any amateur clubs whose boxers enrol. If you're interested in this, or you know anyone who would be, it is accesssport.ac.uk/TAW. You can find Access Sport on Instagram at Access Sport College, or you can contact Stephen Smith at SwiftySmith3. So SwiftySmith3 for that, accesssport.ac.uk/TAW, and it's been a pleasure to partner with Access Sport.
Liverpool's impending transfer business is a mighty thing. It is a worrying thing, I think, for our entire fan base. Adam Elliott, it feels like we're on the cusp of something potentially big with the numbers and the amounts Liverpool are going to spend and the number of players Liverpool are going to bring in, and yet it's fraught with anxiety. We don't yet have a clear steer on what's going to happen. Week in, week, let's take Jurgen Klopp's hint on this one. Just after the Real Madrid 5-2 defeat, he said that work was needed in terms of additions. He was more forthright than I think we'd heard him be in recent times. Normally, he's very sanguine or evasive even about the transfer business. He doesn't want to talk about them, but he admitted we needed to do business. He implied that players, plural, had to be added to the squad. And he also was quite firm about the idea that it had to be done early, which to my mind puts the ball back in the court of the owners, FSG. John Henry did an interview for The Echo the other week. He was more evasive than Jurgen. He said, yeah, we want to do business, but we've got to be responsible. Do you feel we have a sense of where this is going, how this is going to play out?
I think not a sense is because if you asked me what's going to happen, I still wouldn't be able to tell you at this point. And if you told me two completely different things ended up happening, I guess I wouldn't be surprised with either of those, wildly different outcomes. So I don't think we have any sense of security about where exactly this is going. I suppose, you know, the full disclosure, we're recording this on the back of some it's yet more kind of another twist in the Bellingham tale, aren't we? So I feel like every twist in such an ongoing and don't know what the word is, but the transfer saga that just keeps on sagaing. Every time there's a twist in the tale, you sort of we're either up or down with it, and that's the problem with these things, is until it's done, you kind of don't know. But in terms of the time is the most interesting, I think. So John Henry doing his interview, as you said, Klopp making his comments, and then more things coming out as we speak. It's funny because we've been doing these shows years, haven't we? I mean, the gutter shows.
Too long.
And I feel like every year you kind of learn a bit more about how things work, and maybe one day we'll just really know everything. But
do you think maybe we do already?
I don't think so, because
let's imagine we do.
I think what I'm learning.
So what's going to happen, Adam?
Well, so this year I've learned about things being live around now. I think this is what I'm taking from what's going on at the minute. Is you kind of. It's obvious that if something kind of hasn't a big transfer hasn't really happened by the time the transfer window opens, like one of these ones that we're talking about, then the likelihood is that it may not, because I think by the time the window opens, all the clubs kind of know where they're going, the moving parts, the ones that need to be moving are still moving, and everyone else has sort of stopped. So I really feel like that there is a lot going on right now. The worst time is just after the January window shuts and everybody starts talking about the war chest for the summer, and it drives me absolutely mad, that war chest week. But then once you get to now, kind of mid to end of March, I feel like that is when there's games being played, there's things going on, and I think Liverpool will know where they stand, and fair play to them for not revealing all their cards, because you wouldn't, would you? And I do think that they are planning to have a big summer in the transfer market, because I mean, God knows, everyone knows it's needed. So, yeah, I feel like I don't want to be knocked too off my fairly confident course about how the transfers are gonna play out this summer, despite some recent worrying rumours, hints, leaks, games.
Well, we're going to deal with this morning's breaking news. As we record this morning, there is an update on Bellingham. We're going to deal with that quite specifically later in the show. But just in setting the scene in the business that Liverpool need to do, Ian Ryan, there's been quite a bit of talk this week about Liverpool's current director of football, Julian Ward, who's been in the position less than a year. Maybe taking up a position at Ajax in the end of the season. It was announced earlier in the season that he would be leaving Liverpool. It's becoming more of a reality as it gets closer, and news that he's going to take up another job sort of brings into focus, to my mind anyway, that he's maybe not the person even leading the recruitment that Liverpool need, and the process needs to be ongoing now, as Adam's described. He may not be leading that process now. It feels, is there a vacuum? Is there somebody else driving the process? I can't help but fret that the road ahead has a number of bumps in it and a lot of uncertainties.
I think that's fair. I think from the outside looking in, I think you're right to maybe be a little bit concerned, because I think we've spoken on lots of different shows around some of the uncertainty going on behind the scenes. And I think when you get a lot of people changing roles and changing jobs, that's kind of inevitable. You're bound to think, well, actually, is it all lined up properly? Are people kind of doing the bits that they should be doing and stuff? Is the manager getting dragged into things that maybe he shouldn't be getting dragged into? There was certainly a sense of that, I think, at times, where maybe the manager was maybe doing a little bit more than what he should have been doing, through no fault of his own, I might add. So I don't think we're quite clear yet on what's going on, but you'd like to think at the very highest level, Liverpool have got a plan for this. I mean, surely there's no one driving that recruitment forward. There must be someone doing it, but I don't think we quite know who that is. And I think you're right, if Julian Ward's leaving, which he is, then you can't imagine he's absolutely kind of involved to the kind of, the biggest degree, because, he will be somewhere else next season. So I think it's a tricky one to understand the full landscape, Rob. But what I would say, in terms of what Adam was saying before, you have to feel that Liverpool will do significant business. And I think the manager's hinted at it in a number of press conferences. So that leads you down a path of everyone knows that Liverpool have to invest this summer. I think the question is, how heavy did he go? How big did he go? I think at times the owners have maybe let him down in certain situations. I almost feel like that can't be a thing this summer, and we will come on to the Bellingham stuff, and that's obviously got its own kind of backstory after what Ornstein said, but Liverpool have to be lively this summer. They just have to be, because we've all seen what's played out this season. There's real surgery that needs doing. I don't think it's just a midfield thing, by the way. I think there are other areas of the pitch, and we'll probably come on to that. But yes, I see them doing significant business.
We talked in former gutter shows, Neil, about amounts of money Liverpool might spend this summer. And it is wildly speculative to try and put precise numbers on these things. But I think Christian Falk at Bild in Germany said that he felt that Liverpool would have a £250 million war chest or €250 million war chest. Whatever that exact amount is, one thing we can probably safely say is that it needs to be not a small amount of money, quite a substantial amount of money, probably more in gross spend terms than more than Liverpool have ever spent in any one transfer window. I think we can fairly safely say that's the requirement. But the funding of it baffles me still. Is it all, to your mind, still investment contingent? Is it a matter that we're going to hear stories about how we have to sell to buy to a degree again? Will budgets inevitably be clipped if and when Liverpool fail to qualify for the Champions League? Or, because of the need to do business early, has a figure been picked, and are they going to go, well, that's getting funded regardless somehow?
I think my answer is almost yes to all the above, which might sound as though it's contradictory.
I felt it would be, actually.
But I think that first and foremost, I think Liverpool will have a sense of what they've got to do no matter what. So to do them in reverse order, I think what then the next phase of that is ever so slightly Champions League dependent. And the only real world shift there's been across the last sort of 3 weeks has been the result of Bournemouth, I'd say. I think it's an important real world shift and it's an important real world moment. And there's a reason why that one felt as crushing as it did. And I think that it does sort of filter into this. I think Liverpool at some point will be invested in part by a media company in the United States, because I think that is the direction of travel in quite a significant way. I think that investment happening in every single sense would be positive for the idea of short-term investment in the squad, because you're not doing that off the basis of the fact that you don't think Liverpool are going to be at the forefront of football media, if you see what I mean. And the only way Liverpool can be at the forefront of football media is if they're close to the forefront of football on the pitch. There's not a tricky way of doing this so that it doesn't go across the board. There are lots of echoes of the Granada deal, to go back to the late 1990s, early 2000s. In the context of that, and obviously, what was your other one? Sales will happen. Sales should happen. I mean, you know, all football clubs should sell footballers. Players should be let go, and sales, you know, I don't think the idea of... I'll use the goalkeeper example as a really good example. There's loads of reasons why Liverpool should let Kelleher go this summer. But one of those is, in part, to fund other deals. There's loads of reasons why Chelsea will need to let certain players, e.g. Mason Mount, go this summer, in part, even in just a book value sense, to fund other deals. Selling footballers is not a bad thing in terms of that money then being used for future deals. It is not a bad thing at all. And I think
it
shouldn't be characterised as such. So I think one of your key questions, and one of the things that I took from the accounts, and I think you've got to be careful with the accounts, is where cash is and where cash flow is from a Liverpool point of view. And the way in which Liverpool can get priced out of, e.g. a Bellingham, is on a money upfront question. I don't think the idea of money over the long term is the way Liverpool get done in on Bellingham. I think the idea of money upfront and the quantity of that money upfront and where it comes from is the sort of thing that does Liverpool in. On your previous point, I think the key person being involved and back at Liverpool is Mike Gordon full-time. I think that's absolutely enormous, both in terms of where the ownership is, the way they see the challenge, the communication between the management of the club and that. And it's been very clear that Gordon has been away for whatever reason he's been away, and now he is back full-time at Liverpool, and that is absolutely enormous. And it's much more significant than Julian Ward going and taking what is, in terms of scale of job, a step down at Ajax Amsterdam versus Liverpool. The idea also that Ward can't know what Liverpool are up to, I understand why people might think like that, but Liverpool should not be buying any players Ajax are buying. If we're honest about that one. So I think that I wouldn't worry too much on that score, but also how involved he'll be is up in the air, because the most important person being back involved is Mike Gordon. So my answer to you becomes yes to everything, without that being any of that necessarily being a negative thing. It could become a negative thing, don't get me wrong, but without any of it being sort of inherently negative, it is absolutely fine to cash in on some footballers to fund purchases of other footballers. It is literally something Real Madrid have done, e.g. Cristiano Ronaldo, on a number of occasions across the last however many years. It is things football clubs have done for the entirety of the fact that there's been football clubs.
Okay, we are going to drill down into the speculation around some of the names Liverpool have been linked to, many of them really quite obvious ones. But before we do that, I'm keeping you on tenterhooks as to who those names are. But Adam, I want to talk about the shape of the shopping list. It's if it's a bit of a movable feast, obviously, but it feels like in this kind of very odd car crashy roller coastery season, it's moving all the time. I would have said in the wake of the 7-0 over Man United, suddenly they all seem good players in our squad, good players with good attitudes who could be part of a golden red dawn. Now, you might have gone, yeah, you know what, two midfielders might sort us right out, because all the other lads have still got loads to offer. After Bournemouth, we were and finally getting knocked out of the Champions League by Real Madrid, suddenly we're all sighing again and going, well, if we're going to win the league, we're going to need these type of lads in these type of positions. So what? It's the position shopping list I'm after. How many forwards, how many midfielders, how many defenders, how many keepers?
Well,
on the spot. And how many first teamy ones?
So this is a slightly gloomy way of looking at it, but I always think every season we have one particular department of the team which is completely like needs more. You know, we'll be short in. I feel like maybe that's one way of looking at this. So, what area are we going to be desperately short in next season?
If I could have one signing, it would be in.
Yeah,
it's that question we always get to.
Yeah. So because I do think that there is more than one summer's worth of work to do. And yes. So I think that we will probably still be short in one department next season, because there's never as many signings as you'd ideally dream that there will be. So I don't think we'll be short in midfield next season, because that is clearly the one that's, you know, for various reasons, including that's the position where the most likely players to leave belong. You know, we will certainly have some midfielders leaving, and you know, we are in the business of replacing gaps in the squad, and I think that part of the reason that it's been kind of left to go to rack and ruin is because there are bodies in centre mid. It's just that they're very unreliable, or the manager doesn't particularly like them, or you know, various reasons that we know. So I think I do think the midfield will be sorted, and I would say that it would probably be. I'm just going to say two. I can't see
two biggies.
Two biggies. I can't see us signing three midfielders unless it was, you know, it's somebody along the lines of another kind of Bajcetic or Elliot sort of age. One for the future ones. So yeah, two biggies and maybe one for the future. I wonder whether the goalies might just be the same next season. I've just got this sort of feeling that nothing's going to happen there. I completely get what Neil's saying, and I would not stand in Kelleher's way. I can just sort of see that one being the one where either nothing happens, or we sell Kelleher and don't buy anybody else, and everybody freaks out. So I'm not sure whether I see. I think they might just think, well, we'll kind of take the risk on two promising young goalkeepers. I can't remember either of their names, but we've got two promising young goalkeepers.
Davis and Pitaluja?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pitaluja is definitely one of them. I can't
remember.
Is it Ben Davis? I thought he was a defender.
Harvey Davis? Was
he Harvey? Yeah.
I'm getting a nod.
Yeah.
From Andy, so
Harvey
Davis.
So, sorry, yeah, Harvey. I think we would all like to see something around right back, but then we have bought one fairly recently, so you know.
But he doesn't work.
He doesn't work.
He's broken.
I mean, I know he's broken, but
no, I know that's unfair. He's a promising young. We're talking about Calvin Ramsey. He's a promising young right back. I mean, okay. Well, let's look at the defence then.
So yeah, I haven't mentioned the defence. So yeah,
I'm going to leave some room for Ian to talk about this as well.
Yeah, go on.
Go on, Ian. Actually, you can do the defence bit. Adam's he's boxed us two big midfielders and maybe one for the future. Defence. There's talk about Matip coming towards the end of his useful life. Gomez is for Liverpool. I say, I'm getting eyebrows raising. Me, sorry, Joel. You know, you've still got lots to contribute to your family and the world of football. But he may be getting too old for Liverpool's needs. Gomez is still. The jury is very much out on Joe a lot of the time. Do Liverpool need another centre-back? Do they need a full-back? And the full-back question knocks onto the Trent Alexander-Arnold question of whether he could be an option in midfield, I suppose. So I'm opening up cans and worms here, so go for it.
Yeah, I think the defence is interesting, because I think ideally you'd maybe look at it and go, well, Joel Matip's the obvious one that did look to shift, but he's not going to generate a lot of money if Joel Matip leaves the club, if any. No. So you're then looking at, is someone like a Joe Gomez an option? Now, I think ideally Liverpool would want to keep Joe Gomez. They've offered him they've given him a new deal not that long ago, and I think they'd like to keep him around the club as maybe third or fourth choice, probably fourth choice. But because he will have value, that might come into their thinking. And this is where you've got to balance it, because sometimes Liverpool are maybe a little bit hamstrung where they've got to maybe let one or two go just to generate the funds. And it's not the same for every club, we know that. But they've also got to have an eye on Virgil van Dijk's getting a little bit older. And I think it's fair to say he's not had the greatest season. I think where some of this becomes quite difficult is you can look at someone like Van Dijk and say, well, he might be fine next season with a more functional midfield in front of him. And he might say, well, listen, if I had Rodri playing in front of me every week, I would have been a lot better than what I have been. Because I think it's fair to say his performance levels haven't quite been what we've seen. And that might be a consequence of the injury he suffered. And it might also be a little bit about, you know, he's just getting a little bit older. And therefore, you can't stay at that great elite level forever. So all of those things could be at play. And then there's the Konaté question. Now, we know Konaté is an unbelievable footballer, brilliant athlete. When you've got him next to Virgil, apart from the odd performance, you do feel pretty secure that you've got a real good foundation there. But he gets injuries, Rob. So if Liverpool are going to go into the market, they may have to think about someone who can compete for that slot alongside Virgil if he's going to be your main man still, which I think he will be, and I think he should be. And I think he's still showed plenty of signs of good performances, but he's not quite at that kind of peak that we've seen in recent years. Konaté, for me, absolutely the future, but you've got to be thinking about whether he can play week in, week out, and that's always been maybe a bit of a worry this season, just getting him on the pitch and looking after him. So there's definitely work to be done there. I think the Trent ones is really interesting, because that potentially could... you know, you could see a shift there, maybe when he goes into midfield. I'm not sure Liverpool will do that just yet, but I think again that is at play. You know, is Trent more suited to maybe going in and playing a six or playing an eight role? I think there's different arguments for both, because you suddenly throw him into an eight, he might not quite get the room that he gets at fullback, and that's a thing. But you know, he's a clever enough footballer to maybe engineer some of that room. At six, he can dictate a little bit more, but maybe you wouldn't want to see him play there by himself. He'd maybe have to be next to someone, because he'd have to learn that role a bit more. So there's loads of things at play here, but no, it's all up for discussion, to be honest, because I think what we have seen this season, you know, Trent's performances as a defender, and there's some mitigation for this in terms of maybe he's not quite getting the cover from a Henderson or from when Liverpool have been at their absolute peak. But there's no doubt about it, is defensive performances, if you want to just look at them purely in those terms, I don't think they've been good enough for large part of the season. That's not to say he's had, you know, a season where it's all been bad. There's been some decent games. He's come back from the World Cup, and I thought he looked quite sprightly at times. But then there are examples where you are catching him just nodding off, or you are catching him just jogging back. And I'm not talking about when he's on the halfway line, by the way. I'm talking about when he's in a position to get himself back in, but you'd question that appetite and that, does he really love defending? I'm not sure. And I think to be able to consistently deliver high quality performance from a defensive point of view, I think you've got to love the art. I think you've got to love being able to defend. And I don't think that's something he's always found easy. I think he finds the other part of the game incredibly easy. The bit where he goes forward and creates, and he looks like one of the best footballers that's ever played the game, and he's a generational talent. I think he loves that side of it. I'm not quite convinced he loves the other side. And listen, there's mitigation to it, because Liverpool could have helped him a little bit more this season. But yeah, all at play, I think.
Okay, Neil, I want to put to you in terms of this question about the sort of business Liverpool need to do. It's really about addressing the players that need to be replaced. Now, I know there's some obvious ones. I think Adam referred to it, Keita, Milner, Chamberlain, who are likely to leave the club in the summer. But the ongoing flakiness of this Liverpool squad, exemplified in the performance against Bournemouth, showed us again that it just doesn't feel like a Liverpool squad we can trust going forward. And of course, that can change if they string another three or four wins together. But where the clock has stopped at the moment, which are the positions of sort of sacred cows do you think are under threat going into the summer? Which are they having hard conversations about?
I think there's, for me, the most complicated one is what you're doing with Fabinho.
Yeah.
I think that's still a question that is up in the air. And I think that's, you know, again, with that, there'll be moving parts. Does he want to move is one question. And then as an aspect of that, is there someone who'll come in and take him off your hands at a fee that you'd accept? That's another sort of facet of this. That's another question around that as well. So I'm quite, you know, I think that's almost your toughest one. I think the rest of them, there's the three lads who are out of contract in the midfield. There's every chance that Milner ends up hanging around the place one way or another. Possibly as part of a journey towards a backroom thing. He's been talking about his A licence, for instance, in a conversation with Michael Calvin. He's done that. So there's every chance that there's very much a player coach position that might open itself up there, but then you're not expecting to see him play very much football. Firmino's going in there as well. And then I think the, you know, it depends how sacred you feel as though various cows are. I feel as though with Ramsey's fitness being where it is, and in terms of who it is who actually covers Van Dijk, I think it's mad if Liverpool genuinely consider letting Gomez go unless there's an offer that comes in that's so big you can't resist it. But I don't quite see who's going to make the big Joe Gomez offer. The other thing as well on Joe Gomez, and I say this to the listeners as much as anyone else, and this is a player I really like, by the way, but are we genuinely of the view Joe Gomez isn't approximately as good as Nathan Ake? Is that genuinely our position? Because I like Nathan Ake. I think he's a really good player. I think he's underrated, actually, and I think he was underrated before moving to City. But I feel as though Gomez and Ake now, Gomez as he is now, is in a similar class. I think the key question around Joe is whether or not he's where his level of fitness is and sort of physicality is post the last injury. But the idea that he couldn't, for instance, do bits here and there at right back, no matter what's happening with Trent, just to give Trent a game off every now and again, and also when you're playing a certain type of Premier League team, the idea of saying, well, you know what, we could do with having more another six-footer on the pitch, please, and especially at the back post from us, you know, every now and again. We used to do that. You know, I've always said Gomez started the Nou Camp against Barcelona in the 3-0 defeat, and we maybe had more of the ball than we expected, and the manager might have regretted that decision. The other thing on Trent as well, just to sort of say it, is that you don't win 26 out of 27 league games if your right-back's a liability. And we did that, and he was playing right-back, and he was younger then than he is now. So, yes, things have changed, and Liverpool have changed in the intervening period, but I think it's worth always bearing that in mind as well. And there's an argument to move Trent.
Have you made a case for buying a new centre-half, though, in allocating Joe?
I'd buy a new centre-half, yeah.
Right, good.
I'd buy a new centre-half, but I'd let Matip go.
Yes.
So you end up in a situation where you've got Joe, and it's worth remembering there's a lot of successful sides who had a player who knocked around the back, who got 30, 40 starts. When lots of other people probably went, well, I'm not quite sure he's in your best 11, but he gets 30, 40 starts over the course of a season. That has literally happened all the way through football. You know, certainly in the last, since the squad games being
Nathan Ake.
Yeah, Nathan Ake is an example of one. You can go back and you can look at United sides under Ferguson, where in mad seasons, John O'Shea make the most appearances.
So you're talking about, is this still about a Gomez thing? Because I was completely against him filling it right back, and I'm not anymore. And I just, it's an interesting one. I think it's because his stock has fallen, probably. And you know, I was against him filling it right back because I saw him as Liverpool's next centre half. And I think, I don't see that anymore. But I think we can probably adjust. We can adjust our spreadsheets and say that now I'm with you. You know, I think bits and pieces centre half, bits and pieces right back is fine.
And it buys Ramsey some time.
Yeah, yeah.
It buys Ramsey some time. So I think that's where you got Gomez. So for me, I think you probably, if you want to talk about lads who've won it all, I think you've got a Matip question. I think you've got a Fabinho question. If you then want to go down to the next level, I think it's sensible for Liverpool to cash in on either Curtis Jones or Tyler Morton. And in different ways, I'm not even quite sure which one you get more money for at this point, because Jones has played no football this season, whereas Morton's been doing a really good job for Blackburn week in, week out. But there's a finite amount of time on the pitch. I disagree with Adam. I think Liverpool will do three midfielders. I don't think they'll only do two. And if they do three, then it becomes difficult, because if Curtis Jones can't get on the pitch at the moment, it becomes difficult to explain when he's going to get on the pitch. And then around Morton, you know, it would be a real shame if he goes and has the breakout season in the Championship and then Liverpool basically have him make 8 appearances and we all say, yeah, but he'll be learning and growing. But in that meantime, people haven't seen him play, so you've got a valuation question. And I think the other one, I think Liverpool would be mad. And I mean it with the greatest respect to the footballer, but mad not to consider Kelleher as well. I think Liverpool should be definitely looking to cash in on Kelleher at this point. And the other one, I think that Liverpool should be cashing in on this summer's Carvalho. Because if he's not getting anywhere near his game now, then I don't quite know what it is that changes, especially post whatever the next move is, and especially in the context of the fact that Diaz and Jota come back to full fitness. I just really struggle to see it. So what do we all get? Unless we want to send him out on a loan for a year where we think he'll impress, price goes up and we've got a long-term plan. But for me, you know, I think that Liverpool have got to make some hard choices in a couple of areas. The biggest question mark is around Fabinho. The others, the lads who are out of contract with a possible sort of thing around Milner, I'd be looking to move. And then Matip's only got 1 year left anyway, so if he wants to go a little bit early, bring someone else in. As I say, Jones, Morton, Carvalho, and for me, the key question is all the moving parts around Fabinho, not just what does Jurgen Klopp think of him, but literally, what's the fee going to be? Are you better off having the footballer than the fee? How much is he on? Which we know is now a big contract. So do you want to move that off the books? But will someone else take up the slack? You know, Liverpool are not in the business of paying people to play for someone else, and they haven't been for a while. And then that's your moving parts in terms of the outs.
This is where it's difficult because there's been so many players offered this season that it's hard to know whether some of it is system related and therefore are they delivering really bad performances because the system's been poor. And this is where the manager will have to make a judgment because you can't get rid of all of them. And my Joe Gomez point, and I agree with Neil to an extent where I've always liked Joe, but I think the problem you've got now is you look at his game and you think, is he capable of playing 2 or 3 games in a week if you had to play him in those games? And it looks like his body isn't able to stand up to that. And I think that's a concern when you've also...
Or his brain, possibly.
Or maybe his brain, but when you've also got Matip and Konate there who are also picking up knocks, that's where Liverpool have got, and Virgil's getting a little bit older, that's where they've got some decisions to make. On the Trent point, listen, we are talking about, let me be clear on this, we're talking about a footballer who is one hell of a talent, who's having a really tough season, and there's some reasons for that. I think some of it's of his own doing, I think some of it is system related, but you find a place for him somewhere. He plays somewhere for Liverpool because he's that good. So whether it's at right back and you mitigate it by signing people who can help cover him, because like Neil said, we won all those games in a row, but we won all the trophies as well. So he's been part of that. So he, in the right system, a fullback, is still one hell of a player there if you've got the right system around him. I think where you've looked at it this season is he doesn't look like he's quite enjoying it. And again, it might come down to the fact that he's playing in a really dysfunctional system and he's getting a bit fed up. But what you can't do, you can't suddenly just sometimes not look like you're putting yourself in the positions where you should be just because you're a bit fed up. And I think some of his body language has not been great at times, but that will be looked at by the manager. But you find a place for him because he's that good, and it might be 6 or it might be 8, but he will be playing somewhere for Liverpool. But I still think it'll end up being right back, Rob, because I think they've got still quite a lot to do. I agree with Neil, it almost has to be 3 midfielders for me through the door. It almost has to be.
The Trent conversation is a fascinating one, and I think it's going to continue to go on and on, and maybe throughout his entire career. I agree with you, and I think everyone here around this table, that Trent's position in a Liverpool first 11 is non-negotiable. What position that should be, I think we can still keep talking about. Okay, round up this half or this portion of the show by actually doing some admin and announcements. The Anfield Wrap are going on a North American tour this week. The boys are going to Toronto, Detroit, Boston, New York City, Philly and DC. 75% of the tickets have gone already. DC and Boston totally sold out. If you want tickets, go to theanfieldwrap.com/TAW live. Neil, anything you want to add on this one?
No, it'll be a lot of fun, be a different show every night. Not to say that people should come with us and go to each of them, but it will be different every single night. Not as much for us feeling lively around it as well. So I'm really looking forward to it. I've packed different outfits every night as well, to be clear. More costume changes than Cher.
Yep, there's a whole trailer full of Neil costumes to enjoy. Also to be enjoyed is, ongoingly enjoyed, is the Anfield Wrap's spectacularly brilliant Jurgen Klopp documentary. If you haven't been watching it already, you really should be watching it. It's involved in our subscription service Tour Player. We're going to now go to a clip for you to give you a flavour of what it's like.
The most crazy party Mainz ever had, and Jürgen was God.
Winning the title, pure joy. Nothing else to say. I mean, we celebrated for quite some time. Jürgen in the middle of it, he can have a party.
It was the best night of my life. Every song was a banger. All the people there you love.
Fans, manager, players all pushing the right way. That's the winning formula at Liverpool. It's a very tough juggernaut to stop when that's the case.
What we saw the day after losing a Champions League final was absolutely mind-blowing, really.
It was magic.
Jürgen documentary is something else. Get on it. Okay, the next phase of the show, we are going to talk about the specifics of Liverpool's transfer business. The name that keeps coming at us time and time again, for good reason, is Jude Bellingham. We've already couldn't help but reference him so far. There is endless updates daily, it feels, on this transfer saga. David Ornstein, excuse me, clear my throat. David Ornstein, the very reliable David Ornstein of the Athletic, has poured some cold water this morning on the Liverpool, the due to Liverpool links. He said in a tweet, as things stand, Liverpool increasingly unlikely to sign Jude Bellingham this summer. Expected price and financial power of rivals puts LFC hopes in doubt. The pursuit not off and no firm decisions, but sense is that Man City and Real Madrid in a stronger position. Well, that's a pisser, isn't it, Adam? That's a right pisser. I mean, I had in my notes coming into the show before he did this this morning that every other fucker in journo land was saying, sorry, I'm swearing now, but I'm heated about this one. Every other fucker was saying, yeah, Jude's defo going to Liverpool, it's all but done. In fact, before Ornstein's story broke, there were pictures of Jude at Trent attending a concert together, I think, being bezzy mates, and everyone was, well, God, he is so Liverpool. Now he's not so Liverpool. I mean, where are you? Where are you mentally with this? Talk me through it, counsel me, or what do you think is going to play out?
Yeah, I suppose it, I've processed it a bit, but it's important to maybe underline that would be a pisser. Like, if this is the final chapter, if that's actually what happens, they say how much, and then don't buy him. Then after all this, then that would be you know, it's scandalous for me, because why have we been talking about him if we're going to realise, oh, he's really good, the other teams that have got a lot of money want him and we can't afford that, actually. That would be, you know, that
we seem to have done this a bit with Mbappe quietly for 3 years.
Yeah,
you
know, you're
the club have never gone, there's no way we'd consider Mbappe. It's always been Liverpool would consider Mbappe.
Yeah, and he's been pictured,
no chance.
He's been pictured in America like whistling "You'll Never Walk Alone" or something.
Yeah, we've had that crap for years, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. I know, and this is, I suppose, this is where transfer sagas sort of an industry within themselves, and I am aware that I'm part of that industry
very
now.
Much so.
Yeah, we are creating content about this thing which doesn't actually exist yet. So it's difficult not to just be sort of to be buffeted and be up when the rumors are up and be down when the rumors are down. I think as applicating myself, and maybe I can help to soothe you slightly by saying my balm like voice is going to soothe
Stop
you
it.
By saying that I feel like this is a live pot. I think there's things bubbling away right now with this, and that's what this. Do you know what it reminded me of? When the Alisson saga, when we were signing Alisson, it wasn't as much of a saga as this one, but we were competing with Real Madrid, and the first that we knew that it was going to go our way was Real. You know, something from Madrid appeared to say, "All right, you can just have him then."
Yeah,
you know, like, fine, never fancied him anyway, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Chelsea signed Kepa, and then and it was kind of done. So I'm not saying this is how that's going to play out, but I feel like this is games. I feel like the games are afoot, and that there are things going on. And if the noises are coming from elsewhere rather than us, maybe that's a good sign for us. You know, if we're just quietly, confidently not leaking particularly, and the leaks are coming from elsewhere, as this sounds like it. Why would Liverpool leak that they're not confident? They might, but it feels to me that this is games. Something come from somewhere else, and that nothing is dead. I don't know how alive it is, and you know, if I see him holding up a Real Madrid shirt, I'm not going to be stunned. I am going to be hopping mad because I'm wasting our time over this fella who we've all become attached to. But you know, I think it's live still.
Neil, David Ornstein, us, all of us, are we all pawns in Real Madrid's game at the moment? Is this kind of breaking news, this kind of information suggesting the hand of Madrid behind it? Because it feels, or a Liverpool negotiating here. Are Liverpool the ones saying, well, no, it looks a bit too rich for Abel, maybe trying to get Dortmund to push price down? It's a strange one, that City, and just the way the story is presenting itself.
Yeah, I think there's oddities around this one. And I think the other marker point on this is international break. I think that's my other sort of thing here, is that it feels like it's, and let's be honest, this is the international break that shouldn't have been. A lot of people felt that September's international break shouldn't have been before the World Cup, but players had to play together before the World Cup. This one is the one that should never have happened, because we've had the World Cup, and, if you know, give something away and let the domestic season just get to the end of its natural life now. My point is, it's going to be the international break people care about the least ever. possibly in football history. And I think within that, then, there's going to be a desire for anything that sort of adds to any degree of rumour mills. I think there's one thing that is worth pointing out from whichever direction the sort of the rumours, this one's being pushed from. The one thing that is worth pointing out is that the one real world change is what happens to Liverpool at Bournemouth. Not so much what happens to Liverpool at Real Madrid, but what happens to Liverpool at Bournemouth in the context of Liverpool really could do with Champions League football, like every team could do with Champions League football. Newcastle could do with Champions League football, and they're owned by quite literally Saudi Arabia. But Newcastle could really do with Champions League football for a variety of reasons. Liverpool could do with Champions League football. And that's, to me, that is your main sort of material thing. And, you know, he's just had another taste of it, the footballer himself in question. And he may well be of the view, well, himself anyway, I don't want to go to somewhere that doesn't play Champions League football. And I think you can get around that by throwing money at it, don't get me wrong. I'm just of the view this is almost the price of admission. If you want to buy this sort of footballer, this is the sort of stuff that will happen to you, especially when it's being done over such a long period of time, unless you've got it locked down in a way in which Liverpool have had them locked down in the past. So Van Dijk is a really good example of one that Liverpool had locked down for a long time. I'd say I'd argue City with Haaland became a really good example of one by this phase you knew it was locked down, but they're not always locked down, and this one I just don't think is yet in any direction. So this is, for people who are losing their minds, the thing I would say is if you're trying to buy a player who at some point Real Madrid would want, this stuff happens. If you're trying to buy a player that at some point Manchester City would want, this stuff happens. Do Manchester City and Real Madrid always get the players they want? No. It's where there is an alternative track of contemporary English football where Jorginho is playing for Manchester City, which I think is oft forgotten. He chose Chelsea over City in the end. Jorginho and City were desperate to get him in. I'm very much in the situation where, you know, I feel that the drive in Liverpool have got no excuses moment on this one, given the speed with which it's moved. Is if Liverpool do qualify for the Champions League and they don't secure the football or the one that they've clearly wanted like nothing on earth for all this time, I will be a bit like, well, what was the point then, lads? What we were all in this for all the way through, that's all a bit mad. Come on.
It's Adam's feelings, isn't
if,
it?
Well, yeah, I mean, and then sorry. It becomes if what is the plan B? Because then and, if there isn't a plan B, then...
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of footballers who they're going to try and buy over the summer because this is back to the...
I'm sort of going back to Tchouaméni, I suppose.
Yeah, know, no, it can't be like that again where they just don't do anything, yeah. But then I don't think that that's feasible because I think they're going to buy three midfielders, so there'll be another two on the radar anyway. I'm just more of the view, I think that if they don't qualify for the Champions League and they decide that they want to spread the money a little bit more, I can see that. I'd still be against it, I'll be honest. And I also think there's a point here where, as discussed previously, if you're going to get people either in investors in the short term or medium term, who've got a media rights thing, they're not interested in a media rights thing around a team that are coming sixth. So you've got to put some money down as well. But ultimately, I'm very partridge shrug on this one from Ornstein. In the same way that if Ornstein had come out today and said, I think there's a really strong chance Liverpool are getting Bellingham, I think that the race looks like it's moving in their favour, I would still be Ornstein shrug, because I think that the key thing here for all of us, and it should be the key thing for everyone anyway, more than the buying of the footballers, is what happens in the remaining league games. I think Liverpool need to nail that and then cut loose.
Another name, Ian Ryan, that is... come to the fore in the last week or so is Ryan Gravenberch, who is a talented young midfielder not getting games. It is a Bayern Munich who he signed for in about August from Ajax. Our former left back Jose Enrique, in a really weird kind of way, added some grist to this mill by saying, well, he does a podcast, and he was on a show with somebody, and he said, "Yeah, Gravenberch is nailed on for Liverpool, and I know this because we have the same agent." It was nothing equivocal about it. It was just, "Yep, it's happening. Go to the bookie, all but go to the bookies on this one." He was so certain that it's beyond bizarre. I mean, normally transfer rumours we have to have taps of noses and dancing around, but Jose, he's definite about this one. To be fair to him, the Gravenberch rumour existed outside of his imagination as well. I mean, I think it's an interesting one. He's a very young player. He's a player with talent. I'm struggling, and he hasn't had games for Bayern. I'm struggling to see why they would just ditch him quite so readily, though.
I think that's the bit where, yeah, it doesn't maybe quite add up unless they've just got hold of him and thought, well, actually, he's not quite the player we thought he was. I mean, I think he's played 15 times for Bayern, but the fact that they signed him on a five-year deal... And that deal's still got, you know, plenty of time to run, obviously, as you've just said. He's only come in the summer. Makes it feel like maybe it's a bit of an odd one, but he was on the radar, you're right. So regardless of what Enrique's saying, Liverpool were already kind of, or it was certainly being mooted that Liverpool were interested in him. good age profile, you know, big physical boy, so you can see why they'd be interested in him. I think, you know, maybe got 11, 12 caps for his country as well. So obviously Virgil van Dijk will know all about him as well, and I'm sure he'll have fed stuff back if Liverpool are interested. So you can see a world in which it happens, you know, regardless of what ex-players are coming out and saying, and whether they're in the know or not, I'm not sure. I mean, listen, if you're sharing the same agent with someone, then you might have some intel on it, obviously. But it seems a bit of a wild thing to do, to come out and say that. So I don't know, Rob, but you can see a world where it happens because of the profile of the footballer. But I mean, I've not seen loads of him, to be honest, but I think he's right-footed. I think he can play in a number of positions. I think he's been talked about maybe playing, you know, a deep position, but I think he's played in an eight as well. So I think he's a footballer where if Liverpool were to get hold of him because of his age, they could potentially mould him into something completely different anyway. And I think that's what Liverpool have been really good at when they have, you know, kind of dipped into the market in the past. You know, players have come in and you've thought the one thing, but Jürgen's turned them into something completely different. And I think with him being 20 years of age, that could certainly happen. So yeah, it's one to watch, isn't it? It's certainly an interesting one, but it wouldn't surprise me if they got it over the line.
Okay, the next name I'm going to come to you with, Adam, Mason Mount. And this is one that's gained increasing traction with each passing week. You shocked me beforehand by telling me that he was 6 foot tall. I had him down as a tiddler. Shows how wrong you can be about a guy. But Mason Mount has just changed agent. And people seem to think that is bringing closer the end of his days at Chelsea. There's talk that he wanted parity with the likes of Reece James and Raheem Sterling, who are on between 250 and 300 grand a week. And obviously he saw an uplift on his current 60 or 70 grand a week salary. But Liverpool are cited by many sources now as his favourite destination, should he and Chelsea not reach an agreement. How do you see it playing out? Do you think ultimately this just Mason Mount gets some kind of deal he wants? Because I can't see Liverpool offering him the sort of money that Raheem Sterling or Reece James are on anywhere near it.
Me too. And I think that, you know, that would be probably where I would kind of conclude. I've been sort of trying to talk myself into it, I suppose, and it sounds like you have a bit as well. And
very much so.
Yeah, because to start with, I didn't believe it at all. I thought this is you know, new deal on the table, please, Chelsea, kind of wrangling from Mount's agent. There's something about the kind of, I just thought he was Mr. Chelsea, to be honest, and I don't really know that. I don't know any Chelsea fans, but I sort of thought he was, you know, he was their next big, you know, homegrown-ish, you know, one of our own boys type thing that they'd be hanging their hats on. But apparently that isn't the case. You know, I've seen people saying that he's not happy, he's not massively popular, and you know, and isn't the person I thought was going to be, you know, the next JT or Lamps, you know, all of that. So I actually like him a lot as a player, and that's the bit where I feel like I've seen some Liverpool fans saying no, not at all, because of the quality of the player. I mean, I remember it was the League Cup final, wasn't it? He has so many chances, and that's the I do base a lot of things. If we're signing Premier League players, I do base a lot on how they turn up to Anfield and play. I think he's turned up to Anfield and played really well a few times, and I think he's played well against us in finals, or at least one final. I can't really remember the FA Cup as much, what he did, whether he was on. But yeah, I actually do like him a lot as a player. I think there's a lot of Lallana-ish qualities there, which Klopp obviously likes. He doesn't have as much of an issue with Southern lads as a lot of us do up here. Klopp doesn't seem
biggest
to
question
mind.
Mark around him.
Well, Klopp doesn't mind, though, does he?
Mistake.
I mean, yeah, there is definitely a sort of, you know, that.
I'm just saying, it's my biggest concern.
But I think you are half joking, because obviously Adam Lallana does exist, and he's changed a lot of minds about that whole thing. But that
most successful Southerner ever to play for Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was a thing, and you know, it's not just Joe Cole, but there's that. Joe Cole is the example of Southern lad coming up here and it never looking like it's going to work. But yeah, so I think Klopp doesn't care about that sort of thing, and nor should he. So, to come back to the thing that you finished on, then Rob, I just sort of still see Liverpool not being the destination where, if it is about him being unhappy about it, what deal's being offered, I don't see Liverpool being the move for someone on the kind of trajectory, the age profile, and those sorts of things, unless he sort of has got his heart massively set on playing for Klopp, which, you know, who wouldn't want to play for Klopp and play for this club? You know, we're having a bit of a crap season, but I don't reckon we're going to have a crap season for the next two. And that's what players will be thinking. And that's sort of touch on what Neil was saying about the Champions League and about Bellingham before. It's linked to, you know, I'm not massively... I do think it's big that we make the Champions League next season, but I think that players will look a bit more long term or a bit more medium term and think that they won't be out of it for good, and that's how I feel too. So Mount, I still sort of can't see it, but I wouldn't at all be against it.
I can really see it. I think that the way he just thinks a red herring in that he's looking at other lads coming into Chelsea, he's looking at what other people are getting, he's saying, I wouldn't mind that. But also, Chelsea are almost certainly, unless they win the thing, aren't going to have Champions League football next season anyway. They were dreadful against Everton, by the way, Chelsea. They were dreadful and brain dead. It was like they were playing a different football match, the one that was in front of them. Mount also, I don't think, starts. I think he comes on in amongst all of that chaos in there. And I think with Mount, I think it may well be, he's got people saying, yeah, if you want me to stay, it'll be that much. That doesn't mean that's what he wants from his next club by any stretch. I'm not saying he's going to turn up and play for Liverpool for £8 a week. My point is more, you know, I think it's going to be the attitude of, he could well be trying to just force Chelsea's hand into, well, I don't want to be here now because I don't know what's happening next. It's too chaotic. I thought I was the next anointed one. Now I don't know where I am in the pecking order. If I am somewhere in the pecking order, can I be on the same money as the people I see myself as in the pecking order? And that's how much they're on. Because a lot of this is always about sort of about where you're pegging yourself and where you want the football club to peg you as much as anything else. So I'm quite relaxed on that. I think there's loads in the Mount stuff. The other thing is as well, he's one Liverpool have loved for years. When he was signing professional papers, Liverpool really wanted him. And he chose Chelsea because he'd done work there. But I think I've read that in a book, that Liverpool really were really, really, really eager to try to swoop in and get him because they just thought he was great from minute one. And as I say, in the end, he goes to Chelsea. I think there's loads in it. I am concerned about the South thing, three quarters legitimately. I think it is a noticeable thing that footballers who come from the South of England do often find it difficult up at Liverpool. And I think that might be now more of a historic thing. You're going all the way back to Jeff Twentyman. But I think that it is a sort of a live runner and rider that we shouldn't gloss over because it is in there from a sort of a lived experience thing. But in loads of ways, both in terms of the way he talks about the game as well, he does remind me of Lallana. The way he plays, he reminds me of Lallana. The idea of someone in that midfield who leads a certain type of press, that's what he does for Chelsea. The idea of someone who gets you 12 a season, that's what he does. The idea of someone who splits opinion among supporters, because he'll do that if he comes here, by the way. Loads of ours will hate him. Loads of ours will hate him if he comes here. He'll have a six-month period where he's loved, but loads will end up saying, but I just don't know what it is he's doing in that way in which Liverpool supporters and all football supporters love to say, I'd love to get him. I think there's loads of chance that we get him. I think the idea of paying 60 or 70 million for him is absolutely mental. He's got 1 year left on his deal and you need to trade him in for the book value because you've done all the mad stuff in the transfer market to be FFP compliant. Liverpool won't pay that for him. No. I think of all of the ones, I was about to say Adam Lallana, I think Mason Mount starts next season playing for Liverpool.
I think it happens. I do. I think it happens. I don't think it happens for that fee, by the way. I agree.
No, absolutely not.
Not a chance it happens for that fee. And I do agree on the wages thing. You know, players have got, you know, no, they've got self-awareness, but they've got personal pride. And if you're seeing footballers coming in on well more money than them, then they're going to go, hang on a sec, that doesn't tie up that. I'm not having it. So I think there's definitely something in that. But I'm less concerned about the Southern thing. I think Liverpool have got a really kind of, when they've been at their best, they've got a really strong group there. And I think when they go out and make these signings, it is about, well, how will he fit in? What's his background? You know, what kind of lad is he off the pitch as well as on the pitch? And I think they've got a lot of that stuff right. And I think there's still a lot of those same players there. So I think him settling, I don't see that being a problem. In terms of him as a footballer, I think he's very good. Now, he's had maybe hard lines this season with injuries and stuff as well. So he's not been able to kind of get himself a regular run of games. I think he's out this weekend, just gone because of injuries and stuff. But I think at his very best, he's a really, really good player. And I think he's someone who can bring goals to the team as well, because I think he's off that mindset where maybe he's not had a season where he's got loads and loads, but I think there's potential there for him to go on and become more of a goal scorer.
Gets 11 last season.
Yeah, which is decent numbers, to be fair. But I think there's even potential for more goals, to be honest. And he's won a Champions League as well. And listen, it's no bad thing having lads in who've been
dead important in the run as well. He wasn't doing bits or doing sub-appearances. He starts the final. He was dead important in the whole run for them. Tactically really switched on. I love him. I think he'd be great for us, as I say. I just think people will hate him.
I think he's one the manager will really like. And I think if you, even before the Ornstein stuff broke, Rob, if you were to ask me about whether Liverpool will get Bellingham or Mount, I probably would have said Mount, to be honest. I always felt the Bellingham one was going to be really difficult to do. And we've all been on a bit of a journey where you think, well, could they make it happen? I was always a little bit cynical about it for lots of reasons. But then when, you know, when there's like no other real noise about him, you do think, well, maybe he could go to Liverpool. But, you know, today's news is a bit of a bit of a puncture in that. But the Mount one, yeah, I like him as a footballer.
But I don't think it's either or.
No, I don't think it necessarily is. But
that would be madness. I don't, yeah, the same position.
I don't think it is.
It could be that the. I mean, Bellingham. If Bellingham is going to be that expensive, then it could be that it's Bellingham or a series of others. Though I don't think, you know, that is that not something that we kind of think, and we maybe we've already decided to do, you know, Gravenberch.
What Neil said before is, you know, you can structure these payments in a way where you can pay them over a certain amount of time. But if someone is willing to put the money down up front, then it, and listen, Bellingham can still get to say, obviously, he can say, well, actually, I only want to go there. But let's be honest, you know, we're talking about two other teams at the table in Man City and Real Madrid who are guaranteed to be playing Champions League football and guaranteed to be playing for probably the biggest honours. And Liverpool aren't in that place at the minute. So for him, regardless of whether he's mates with Trent and he wants to play for Jurgen Klopp, there's a level of uncertainty that exists at Liverpool right now that doesn't exist with Man City and it doesn't exist with Real Madrid. So from his point of view as well, he might be thinking, well, I'm not too sure about Liverpool at the minute. Now, could I do 1 year out of the Champions League? Yes, I probably could, but who else are they in for? Where are they going to be in 2 years? I'm not quite sure. And I might think Liverpool will get back over the next 12 months. I really do. I think the manager will sort a lot of this out. But you can understand from his point of view why he's maybe a little bit unsure. But yeah,
I guess I mean if it's Bellingham or three. Like,
I've had a thought about the Bellingham. This story broke just before we started recording, so I'm processing it still. The also, we're going to go back, and you're going to get my tuppence worth now. It's come from Dortmund. That's my theory. The reason is, and this is an optimist's view, but I think I might be right. If Liverpool want Bellingham and they believe Bellingham wants Liverpool, what are Liverpool going to do? They're going to try and engineer the best price out of Dortmund, obviously. And they're going to subtly, by getting Jude to say, no, I want Liverpool and no one else, get Jude to do their bidding for them in a certain sense to help that price be restricted. Dortmund are therefore motivated to go, Liverpool are pissing about on the price. They can't afford it. There are other suitors out there. It's the likeliest source of the story. It's not likely to come from Man City who go, Liverpool can't afford it, but us and Real Madrid can. Madrid aren't likely to throw Man City into the mix either. I think the story is coming from Dortmund, and I think it's coming from Dortmund because Liverpool are saying, yeah, we want Bellingham, but only at a price. So Liverpool are the ones now adding notes of caution because they want this done for 100 million, not 130. That's my tuppence worth on it.
Well,
and I think, okay, you can respond.
Are you going to end on that bombshell? I want you to end on that bombshell.
I could end on that bombshell,
let him end on a bombshell.
I'm going to end on a bloody bombshell. Well, I hope you've enjoyed the gutter. It's full of bombshells, week to week, bombshell after bombshell, and award after award. If you want more of it, you're going to have to subscribe, but it's worth your money. Thank you very much for helping me prove that Ian Ryan, Neil Atkinson and Adam Melia, and for Andy Heaton for producing. Well, hopefully we'll see you again soon. Sports Social Podcast Network.